This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
All right, we're going to go ahead with the first debate. And this is, the debate is on standard care of chronic type B aortic dissection in 2016. Open repair versus endovascular repair. Dr. Conti is going to advocate open repair.
Thanks, Bill. And I think the importance of Darren's talk is to not get to this debate, if we could, because no matter what we do, we know chronic type B aortic dissection is a difficult problem. And I want to point out that the debate is about standard of care before the laser light show begins. So these are my disclosures in general. They have nothing relevant to this particular talk. Okay, so when and why do we have to repair the aorta after chronic type B aortic dissection? It's because primarily of aneurysmal enlargement or recurrent symptoms. So standard indications would be an aortic diameter greater than 5.5. We do know that once the aorta gets over 6 centimeters, the risk of rupture starts to get actually very high. Progressive enlargement greater than 5, or some people would say 4 millimeters a year. Recurrent symptoms or patients who have connective tissue diseases such as Marfan's, in whom we know the long-term prognosis for their aorta and aortic-related problems is very poor. So this is a big surgical challenge because typically patients with chronic type B aortic dissections who develop aneurysmal degeneration require extensive aortic replacement, typically thoracoabdominal aortic replacement. And in this setting, compared to purely degenerative aneurysms, there's increased complication rates. Increased risk of spinal cord injury reported in the range of 4 to 12% or even as high as 15%. The intercostals in these patients are almost always patent, which means there's a lot more bleeding that goes on during the case. You need to reconstruct the visceral branches to maintain end organ perfusion. Their mortality rates range very widely in series. I'll show you some of the data. The average is about 11%, but they range from 0, which is hard to believe, to 33%. Now, this is what you're trying to achieve with this repair. And it's technically a big challenge even for experienced surgeons. So I would not sit up here and tell you that this is not a surgical beast, because it is, and it requires technical skill, experience, and centers that have adequate support, anesthesia, and resources to execute these repairs safely. So here's a patient. She's a 48-year-old female. Her only risk factor was hypertension. She had no history of illicit drug use, and she presented with this aneurysm. In the setting of a previously unknown dissection, she had no previous known history of dissection. You can see actually the false lumen is partially thrombosed, as was just pointed out. Her aneurysm has grown over time. It's now about 5.8 centimeters in maximal diameter, and it's largest actually in the abdominal segment. Dissection proceeded right down to the aortic bifurcation. So actually, you have an audience response system sitting at your table. This is an interesting problem where we have lots of different thoughts that go on every day. So I'd ask the audience to vote here right now. How would you treat this particular patient? A TVAR followed by a possible staged hybrid repair with abdominal debranching, a branched repair, an open repair, clamp and sew, an open repair with left heart bypass and distal aortic perfusion, an open repair with deep hypothermic circulatory arrest. So it's not in the system. Okay, forget that. We'll come back to that. I'll ask everybody later. Here's another patient who we recently took care of, who's a 29-year-old woman who did have a history of Marfan's. Incredibly, she presented to us after her fifth pregnancy, even knowing that she had Marfan's, with acute aortic syndrome. Fortunately, we were able to cool her off and allow her to deliver her term pregnancy. And here you'll see, let's see if I can speed this up a little bit. Another type B aortic dissection. This is now in a chronic phase, but it's really limited to this descending thoracic aorta. This is now about 5 centimeters. She's a patient with Marfan's disease. You'll see that this terminates really at the diaphragm. Now, I would subject to you that both of these patients, for a variety of reasons, are better served with an open repair. So what are the challenges for TVAR? We've already heard some of them, but in this setting of chronic aortic dissection, they're significant. they're different than they are in the acute setting. So sealing the entry tear only is generally going to be inadequate to ensure false lumen thrombosis in all cases. Distal fenestrations are going to allow persistent pressurization of that false lumen. And another major issue is that the compliance and the remodeling of that septum are not predictable and may be poor. So no matter what you see with endovascular repair of chronic type B aortic dissections, you'll see that a high percentage of the cases need some sort of adjunct, some sort of hybrid approach, either with extension into the arch or with abdominal branch involvement, with a variety of additional techniques and sometimes off-label techniques of introducing devices into the false lumen. And there's increased failure rates from endoleaks and reinterventions. So while there's a lot of things that may be possible, I think that a lot of these cases are actually very complex and are not always available to be treated successfully. And this is a cartoon basically depicting what can happen with continued pressurization of the distal fenestration site, leading to failure, aneurysm growth, and even potentially collapse of the stent graft. So here's an example, a bad example, of a patient who actually 5 years earlier had undergone extensive endovascular treatment for chronic type B dissection who presented to us. Now he's 80 years old. He already had a spinal cord injury from the initial treatments. He's undergone multiple interventions, and this aneurysm is still totally untreated. So obviously you'll see here that there's a lot of devices. You see a stent graft in the subclavian. You'll see a type 1 endoleak. Pretty much every endoleak you can think of, you'll be able to see as this plays out. The section of the aorta between the T-var and the E-var below it has expanded dramatically over time. This patient is actually a very poor surgical candidate at this point. When he was initially treated, he was a robust, by his family, his own description, a robust patient. He's now been weakened by his spinal cord injury and his limited functional capacity. Let's see if I can speed this along a little bit farther. So there's another endograft below. There's a big aneurysm in the middle. There's proximal and distal endoleaks above, and there's another endoleak down here in the aortic segment. This is a disaster. Okay, so this is not an easy thing to take care of. Challenges for open repair in this disease are significant. Frequently, you're going to need circulatory arrest because of inadequate clamp zone proximally. You're going to need to extensively repair the aorta, often with a thoracoabdominal repair, and I already mentioned increased bleeding in operative time, spinal cord injury, and acute kidney injury are all higher compared to degenerative aneurysms without dissection. So these are the highest risk patients that we actually treat. How do we do it? Very quickly, the operative exposure, you're going to need single lung ventilation. You're going to want to carefully dissect out the distal arch, usually divide the diaphragm, prefer a retroperitoneal approach with the kidney up, and you may want to isolate the branch vessels, but it's really not required. You can do all that from the inside with a standard thoracoabdominal approach. We like to resect the sixth rib to get broad exposure. Here's an example of the operative field for a patient here. Here's a large dissected aorta you can see above. And here you can see the exposure through this incision just prior to repair. This was actually that 47-year-old female that we were talking about in the beginning of the discussion. Here's an inclusion repair that's the same patient with a Crawford patch to the viscerals, a branch to the left renal, and this is a secondary intercostal branch to a group of intercostals at the diaphragm in that patient, which we sometimes do selectively. And here's also a chronic type B dissection in which we chose a multi-branch graft because the different visceral branches were actually splayed out quite a bit in this large aneurysmal segment at the diaphragm. So different approaches depending on the anatomy. The patient who got the 47-year-old patient who got the repair that I showed you got a post-op scan. We don't often do this, but this is now a year or two later. To show the repair, and actually there's that patent intercostal branch that's still functioning and providing supply to her intercostals. So what does the data say? The data says that actually, not surprisingly, if you can treat these patients with a less invasive approach, the early procedural mortality is less. The question is really whether or not it's effective in all cases. So the mortality rates are generally lower for TVAR. Stroke and spinal cord injury rates are actually not that different between the two approaches. Reinterventions, though, are significantly higher for TVAR, with some series reporting reintervention rates as high as 47%. The average is in the range of about 20%, and it's not surprising when you consider those anatomic challenges we talked about. If you look on this comparative analysis from the group at Michigan, who actually treat a fair number of these, they show that the overall cumulative survival, and these are obviously selected, not randomized patients or propensity adjusted, is not statistically different. Of course, the patients with open repair are more anatomically extensive than the patients who got endovascular repair. But if you look at reinterventions, even on this particular series, the reinterventions over time are much higher for endovascular, and this is actually on the low end of those reports about reinterventions that I mentioned. Open surgical repair in contemporary series has been reviewed in a number of recent papers over the last several years. This is one large systematic review that looks at a large number of series that have been reported, essentially looking at the major early events. Mortality rates, historically 15%, in the contemporary series, 7.5%, but this is not trivial still. And if you look at complication rates, they range around 5 to 13%. For spinal cord ischemia and renal ischemia. These are probably best case scenarios from reports from experts in large series. Nonetheless, I think they probably do reflect the state of the art in tertiary centers where there is some experience with the repair. So currently, what do the guidelines say? What the guidelines say is that if you're a low surgical risk patient with symptomatic chronic type B aortic dissection, you should be considered for an open repair in a dedicated center that's reported to have low complication rates. In those patients, you should consider a variety of adjuncts, CSF drainage, left heart bypass, and moderate hypothermia to reduce procedural mortality. What it suggests is that moderate to high-risk patients or those with contraindications to open repair should be considered for endovascular repair. And I would suggest that there are obviously factors to consider here to pick one versus the other, particularly the extent of the disease. If it's limited to the descending thoracic aorta, that's favorable for TVAR. Patients are high risk, in which you may accept some of those reinterventions over time, and in patients who maybe have had a prior aortic repair or in whom you're doing this in a subacute setting. But for those who have more extensive disease, those who have complex branch anatomy, and certainly those who are younger or with connective tissue diseases, I think today actually open repair remains a standard of care. And I would suggest to you that standard of care should mean it's applicable to most patients and effective for the majority who need intervention. And today, that's still open repair. Of course, I'd love to be able to do away with that as well, because this is tough on both the patient and the surgeon. But I think we're still evolving, and endovascular is not yet ready to be the standard of care. Thanks.
Thank you. We're going to ask Dr. Ben Starnes to come and debate. I'll remind Ben that Dr. Conte is the director of the program.
Well, apparently, ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of my exercise is to provide you with a laser light show of some sort. Can I have the slides up, please? Well, I would submit that the standard of care in the year 2017 is endovascular repair for chronic type B aortic dissections. Well, before this debate, is this working? There we go. Before this debate, I went online to look for a picture of Dr. Conte, and this is what I found. It's interesting. There's three different pictures. The lighting, you know, the middle one, the open surgeon, he's very tan, but he kind of looks the same. There's a white background for the endovascular surgeon, but I'm kind of confused because the tie's the same, the suit's the same. These have all been manipulated by somebody, I don't know, but please, will the real Michael Conte please stand up? Well, what do we know about Dr. Conte? Well, we know he's extremely smart. He's very charismatic. He's a good-looking guy. He's fit. He's a great technical surgeon, a great scientist, and he has good common sense. So in this room of highly educated people, I am confident that you'll agree with me that Dr. Conte is a smart man. But why would he choose to do a big open operation for these patients? He tried to scare you earlier with Marfans and connective tissue patients. This is a 46-year-old patient of mine with Marfan's who I treated in the year 2007 with this large type B aortic dissection with chronic aneurysmal degeneration. And I actually have 7.5-year follow-up on this patient. And you can see that the aneurysm no longer exists. He showed those beautiful CT scans of the patients that he operated on, but I would submit that these are exactly the same results. So why would someone so smart choose to do such an extensive operation with a high risk of morbidity compared with the picture to the right, which is an 8-millimeter groin incision? Well, open surgery for chronic type B aortic dissection is bad. It's bad. 10% 30-day mortality rate, 10% paraplegia rate, 10% renal failure rate. Half of these patients go on to dialysis, and 10% have pulmonary failure. When we look at the classification of patients, we know the Stanford type A and B classification. Our strategy for acute type B aortic dissections is much like Dr. Schneider described earlier. If they are complicated, we treat them with TVAR. If they are uncomplicated, we wait and see. But what about the chronic type B aortic dissection? Aneurysmal degeneration occurs in up to 30%. Open surgical repair, we know, is associated with high morbidity and mortality rates, 10%. It's the 10% rule. TVAR for chronic aortic dissection is controversial. Here's a patient that came to me. He was an 80-year-old gentleman with a large distal arch aneurysm in association with chronic type B dissection. He was hoarse. He had hoarseness. He was the only caregiver for his disabled wife. And we treated him with TVAR, and you can see the results. This was within a month. Look at the favorable aortic remodeling within 30 days. And within 30 days, he had complete false lumen thrombosis. His aneurysm was a centimeter smaller, and his hoarseness had remarkably resolved. Here's another patient that we watched and we managed medically with a chronic type B aortic dissection. You can see in the middle panel, he had dilated up his false lumen. We treated him with TVAR. This is an intraoperative photo. I wasn't quite happy with this result because the stent graft looked compressed. So I went up to do some gentle ballooning and then all of a sudden saw the stent graft burst open. And I quickly looked to the screen to see if his blood pressure had dropped, and it hadn't. He was perfectly fine. So I wound up remodeling this myself all the way down to the celiac, and here's his result. He had a remarkably good result, and his follow-up CT scans show complete resolution of this chronic type B aortic dissection with a minimally invasive approach. Why would you operate on this patient? Sometimes this strategy doesn't work, as he showed. There are endoleaks that develop, persistent retrograde perfusion of the false lumen. Here's a patient that was on Coumadin for a heart valve. Well, that's easy to treat. We go in and we obliterate the false lumen with some sort of embolic device like an upside-down converter with an iliac plug. Well, those are a bunch of anecdotes, but let's go look at the literature. 35 manuscripts describing this. Probably the most important one is a systematic review of midterm outcomes for managing these patients with TVAR. And this was Matt Thompson's group out of St. George's. 17 studies, nearly 600 patients, technical success rate in 90%, 30-day mortality, not 10%, 3%. Midterm mortality, 9%. Survival was 59 to 100% in studies with a mean follow-up of 2 years. Complications were rare. Remember, 10% rate of all of those complications I listed. Retrograde type A dissection, less than 1%. Aortoesophageal fistula, paraplegia, stroke, death at 30 days, all very, very low. When we look at these scatter plots to look at false lumen thrombosis, this occurred in over 80% of these studies. And when you look at the change in aneurysm diameter associated with each level of thrombosis, the more levels of thrombosis you have and can promote, the better your results. Let's not stop there. Let's go to institutional series. Cleveland Clinic, 76 patients, 30-day mortality, 5%, paraplegia, 0, 1 stroke, and survival at 1, 2, and 3 years eclipses that of open repair, 86, 82, and 80%. Well, the perioperative risk of TVAR is extremely low when compared to modern open surgical series. And we say that false lumen thrombosis correlates with favorable midterm outcomes. Let's go and look at our own series. So I don't necessarily trust all the data that's in the literature, but I do trust my own results. And this is a paper that we published on outcomes of stent graft therapy for dissection-related aneurysmal degeneration. We went back and looked retrospectively, looked at false lumen thrombosis, sac shrinkage, and positive aortic remodeling. We had 45 cases. I'll go through this a little bit more quickly, but 38 were type B chronic aortic dissections, and we used several different approaches, mostly endovascular, to treat these patients. We had some adjunctive procedures to include carotid subclavian bypass, spinal drainage in most of them, and you can see where our proximal landing zone was in all of these patients. We had no periprocedural mortality. One stroke. We had three patients that had transient renal failure. All of them returned to normal, and our median hospital length of stay was 6 days. We had complete false lumen thrombosis throughout the length of the stent graft in all but one of those cases. Only two endoleaks, and sac shrinkage was noted in the majority of patients, and most notably, none of those patients enlarged their aneurysm on follow-up. And here is a representative example of that. You see a very nasty chronic type B aortic dissection with aneurysmal degeneration, and 2 years later, you see a beautiful result with great remodeling. So I think that TVAR for chronic aortic dissection is associated with acceptable rates of morbidity and mortality when compared with standard open repair. False lumen thrombosis and sac shrinkage is associated with positive aortic remodeling, and longer-term follow-up is needed to understand the success of this strategy. And ladies and gentlemen, I think you will agree with me that the standard of care, at least in Seattle, is endovascular repair for this disease. So, I think it's this guy right here. He just doesn't want to admit it. But thank you very much.
So, do we have questions for our two debaters? Now, if we've had a debate, we have to have a vote. So can you turn up the house lights, please? All those who agree with Dr. Conte's position that open repair is the way to go, raise your hands. It's an uphill battle here, Mike. All those who agree with Dr. Starnes that the stent graft is the weapon of choice. All those who just want to turn their cell phone off and say, I didn't get that call. Okay. Well, I think that we're running congratulations to both of the debaters. Obviously, it's a circumstance of individualized medicine and surgery, really.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.